Howdy, welcome back to another fun-filled episode of the Unknown Secrets of Internet Marketing. My name is Matt Bertram. I am, well, the SEO expert for today's session, but I have a special guest with me today. Enrico Moses is somebody I've known for about 2 years. I would definitely call him a friend. We ran into each other at a Denver Innovation Conference 2 years ago. He's credentialized in a lot of different ways as far as being Forbes 30 under 30 and all kinds of awards. He does all kinds of social media things, but we have had extremely long conversations. Like I'm talking like, I think the last conversation Moses, you and I had was for, I don't know, 4 or 5 hours with almost no downtime in the conversation. It was just kind of rapid fire, different threads, talking about all kinds of
stuff. Till like 3 a.m.
it was awesome. And I am so excited to share you with my audience. Enrico, I call him Moses. He's a strong Christian. I want to say that I want to give you the credit for really educating me on the intersection between like culture, human experience, and like high-end fashion and marketing. Okay. And I do a lot of stuff for small businesses. We work with a number of enterprises, thought leadership, all that in the oil and gas space. Okay. But you are out there in LA. Is that right?
Yeah. In Los Angeles. Out there
on the tip of culture, right? So you got France, you got, you know, New York for financial, but everything is like kind of, LA is driving culture. That's where a lot of the stars are. That's where a lot of the movies, TVs come from. I know Atlanta now has a lot of the movies since COVID. But you're really working with a lot of companies from a social media standpoint, from a growth hacking standpoint, from a growing different accounts, thought leadership, that sort of thing. And I thought you would bring a really interesting flavor to what we normally talk about. And I think that, you know, when you talk about SEO and you talk about social signals, some of the things that people don't know is every time someone likes a page, okay, that creates a new web page because the people don't know this. Like, so that you like the page, and that's why you shouldn't modify posts, because every time you modify the post, it has the old post and it creates no post, and that affects the virality of social media's pages or posts. And then every time someone likes it or shares it or comments, to have that show up, it's actually a new web page that's being created. Okay. Right. And they're just like in Google, there's an algorithm that affects these different social media platforms. And understanding what these algorithms are trying to do, which is, you know, folding back into the human experience and how people are searching and what people like, that's what the algorithms are trying to capture. Right. And, so I know that that's quite an intro there, but I want to let you introduce yourself a little bit. And then I just want to kind of share with the audience some of the awesome conversations that we've had, and let them be a fly on the wall to continue in some of our past conversations, really.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thanks for having me, Matt. I love the conversations we've had in the past, and I'm super excited to chat with you and share, you know, with your audience. Also, I want to clear up, I'm not a personal Forbes 30 under 30. That's my business partner, Marcus. But I have done a ton of things in my past. I love growing social media accounts.
You should be.
I think that, you know, what we've talked about is going to be so powerful because, you know, your background in SEO and where the world is heading with social content and virality, like they're so integrated, and I think both need to understand each other. So I'm super excited for this conversation.
Well, let's talk about, maybe to set the table a little bit more. Why is culture and the human experience so important when it comes to digital marketing, social media marketing? What is your perspective on that?
Yeah, such a good question. You know, culture is kind of our background, right? So a lot of it comes from where we grow up. who our parents are, who our friends are, the music we listen to. And so the way I look at social content or any type of content is it's really about being compassionate, right? So it's like, how can you care about the people you're making content for? I think that you look at the people who are just like amazing at going viral, like somebody like Mr. Beast. And you hear stories about how he like cares so much about the algorithm. He cares about every single second of how he's editing the clip to make it more attractive for his audience, right? And that's kind of how I think about culture and why it's so important to understand culture when you're creating content, because the more you understand your audience, the more you can actually create things that they're going to appeal to or they're going to want to share with their audience, right? Which is what kind of going viral is kind of creating content that not only people like to consume, but they want to share with their friends and family. So I think it's so important to kind of start, tearing at the roots of what does culture mean. And let's say you're a brand, it's like, how can you understand the culture of your audience? You know, and there's so many different ways that you can go about doing that. But I think at the first kind of pillar is compassion, like having compassion, really understanding, you know, how did this person grow up? Where do they live? What type of romance life do they have? How much money do they spend on the day-to-day basis? You know, what, because of their culture, like I was just talking to my fiance, we run a marketing agency together, and we are talking about the difference between Instagram and TikTok and how you can put the same content on these two platforms. They're going to have a completely different reaction. And a big part of that is like, who's the audience that's on TikTok? Who's the audience that's on Instagram? And they're actually, they do overlap, but they're two different audiences. And so you do have to kind of create content for each audience in a specific way.
So, you know, some of the word, so you say the same thing that I say, but from such a different perspective, right? Mm-hmm. So what I heard was content planning, right? Mm-hmm. Target personas, like who you're going after. And then one of the things I think you touched on that's really important for brands is you need to do the deep work to understand who you are and what you're trying to put out there in the world, what kind of energy you're trying to create, what is your unique selling proposition, how are you different than anything that everybody else is pushing out there, so you don't become commoditized, right? And understanding who that audience is and how you're going to connect with them takes a lot of deep work that I don't know if a lot of brands have done that before. It's just like top line revenue growth, like let's push them out there because we want to get eyeballs to get them to the website to get them to buy stuff. Right. And what you're saying is you really need to think about it to build an audience to connect with these people, because you don't just want to put content out there. You want to put a content out there that they connect with and want to share with. And maybe you could give an example of like content that's really the virality of it is the shareability of it. Can you maybe subscribe an example or two about that?
Yeah. So I run a couple of different pages. One of the pages I run is all about house music, right? So you think about the consumer is people who love house music, right? So that page is created, that brand is created for that consumer in mind. And some of the viral content is playing into their love of house music, right? So it's like an artist they love, you know, might be playing something live. So you have a couple of things at play, right? So it's like already there might be an artist they love, but then they're playing house music, which it might be a new genre for them. So now you have this juxtapose, which is kind of interesting. It's like, oh, here's the artist that isn't typically playing house music, right? And so you're playing with all these different parts of culture when you're having something go viral. One of the most important things that you can play with is nostalgia, right? So that context of nostalgia, right? So maybe it's an old song that you listened to when you were growing up, and that really strikes up in you your love and passion for house music, right? And not only your love and passion, but then you're bringing up, you know, this is where the soul of house music comes from. It comes from Chicago, right? So it's like now there becomes another talking point. So it's like viral content has these different pieces that makes people connect to the content, and even more than just one way, right? It's like, okay, great. I could share a DJ, you know, mixing a house music set, but maybe that's not going to be as viral because it doesn't have that juxtaposed kind of instance to it, right? Or it doesn't have that nostalgia to it. It's just new modern house music, right? So there's all these different things that viral content kind of hits on, right? And so the more you can pull people into your content through appealing to some of their senses, whether it's their love of something, whether it's their hate of something, right? These are like deep psychological beliefs that we have, right? And this is the same thing. So it's like you might create something that some people love, but then maybe 40% of people hate, right? Which now you have an audience of like, I don't like this, I like this. And they're literally just like boosting the algorithms because, as you know, every interaction with your content boosts the likability or the possibility that people are going to now see your content, right? Because all these platforms are measuring this in real time.
Well, yeah, I mean, that if they can tie to your emotions, they can drive more engagement, they can drive more time on the platform. And the algorithms, the way I look at it is like, they're kind of trying to separate it out. They're trying to create homogeneity and showing you all the things that you do like, and potentially showing you things that you don't like to create that interactivity, but to really separate it out. So it's trying to create, okay, you know, here's group A and here's group B, and they really define that well. And then maybe they'll kind of clash it and test it to create like a positive and negative charge, if you will. I want to go back to one of the things you said, because it actually even made me think. That's why I love talking to you, because it always makes me think. So, you know, you started out saying, hey, nostalgia, right? And what I know from the data that I've read and the campaigns we've run, people buy two things typically. They buy familiarity and they buy novelty, right? You said in completely different words, this is something they're familiar with, that there's nostalgia from their childhood potentially, or some experience they had in their life exposed them to that, that made them feel a certain way. And you're going to tap into that, but you're going to do it in a different way that one, like, makes them think, maybe adds kind of some value that maybe there's other people that like what they like that they might share that with. So you're a value resource for them to say, hey, check this out. Because I know when I was starting to build like some viral accounts in the past, there was certain pages that would just create fantastic memes. And I would be like, oh, I resonate with that meme. And I would save it on my phone and maybe I would share it, and then other people would engage with it. And that's where I saw a lot of things growing. But man, the one thing that you said that makes me think, when you started talking about, okay, this is where maybe house music's from and Chicago, and like that connection, I might not have made that connection. Or maybe I knew about that connection subconsciously, right? And understanding, which you are so good at, is understanding people's motivations, understanding people's human experience and the roots, really where they're coming from, to understand why you're creating this content is going to speak at this deep in their bones, in their DNA level to them. Because I guess that was the thing that, let's jump into that. And then I want to take the conversation a little bit here and then we can go into memes. Okay. When, you know, you talked to me about how, you had a clothing line at one point and you had a store, right?
Yeah.
And we're talking about brand, right? And this is the difference between like a commoditized service and a brand. You told me in our last conversation at, you know, 10 minutes of the 5 hours or whatever that we had, that you were built, you know, you're tied into culture and music, and music's kind of at the core, I think, of culture. And even one of the things you talked about DJing, is that that's one of the raw forms of creation, right? Of making music. You had some t-shirts and hats and different kind of things that spoke into a certain niche, and you were charging, you know, $400 or $500 for a custom t-shirt. And then we were talking about Kanye, and we were talking about, you know, he wanted to sell all the shoes for $20, and how that that could be a juxtaposition as well, is that he wants to sell everything to the masses and where it's affordable and everybody can reach it. But also where most luxury brands come in is like that purse or those shoes or that whatever it is has such a price tag on it. And you told me that people get upset with you when you would, you know, now I don't think sales are a good way to go, because I agree with that. You take the value of what you have and then you suppress that to the point where, no, I think you should add more things, like throw in a hat, throw in a bag, like in a special thing, but you shouldn't cut your cost. And there was something that you were selling a shirt for some price.
It was like $250, $300. Yeah.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about that. And let's talk about that. Cause I think a lot of people that are digital marketers that are listening to this are going, how do I increase my price, or how do I help coach a client that's selling something on e-commerce or something that might be commoditized in some way? Or there's a lot of people that are building brands. And that's like, if you look behind me, I love mascots and I love brands and I love going across all different verticals. But let's talk about that. Maybe why that happened and why you thought the thought process behind the value of an item.
Yeah, it's such a good example, because I think part of it even connects to some of the stuff we're dealing with now in crypto, right? So it's like having a brand, a $250, $300 shirt, t-shirt, right? And the thing about that t-shirt is, I remember even being at the conference, the trade show, where I was buying those shirts wholesale. And I remember going to the booth, seeing the shirts, and then just like my mind was blown. I was like, these are the nicest t-shirts I've ever seen in my life, literally. And I left the booth. I was like, I'm not sure, because they were asking for like a $10,000 order minimum. You know, I'm a small business. I was like, I'm not really sure if I want to allocate that much of my budget to this brand. So I leave. I get all the way to my hotel room, and I was like, I literally have to go buy these. I couldn't stop thinking about this brand. So I went all the way back, which is probably a 2-mile walk, you know, convention center all the way to the hotel. I go back. I'm like, I got to order. I ordered $10,000 worth. I start slowly getting into my store, right? So what you have to have is belief. So I'm kind of telling you the story. If you're going to charge a high price, you can't just charge a high price. There has to be substance to that price, right? And so the reason I knew I could charge that much, because I personally love fashion, and I'm like, yo, I've seen so many t-shirts. These t-shirts have like hand embellishment. It had like so many different prints. It had foil prints. It had, you know, literally like 17 different types of prints on this t-shirt. And so I'm like, wow. So I put it out. The price is $150, $200. And, you know, it was like maybe a week or two of people coming in. They would see the shirts. They'll see the price. They'll be like, what the? They were mad. They're like, why would you have this? You know, nobody's going to buy this. Nobody. And I was just like, you know, in my heart of hearts, I was like, I think it's tight. And slowly people would start coming in, and like, that's what started getting me like customers from the Minnesota Timberwolves, right? So some of the Timberwolves were like, yo, nobody has this. I just saw this in Vegas. You know, nobody has this out here. So now that they know the value, because they're seeing it in other places that are high value. And so now me taking this risk now flip my store from being kind of unknown to like, he's the guy that knows about stuff ahead of time, you know, because it's being valued not just here, but in other places too. So that kind of started changing the game, and people still come in, and those t-shirts started to sell. But what you also have to have is patience. You know, if you're going to put a high price, people are going to walk in and they might even be offended. You're going to tell your price to people. They're going to scoff at it, and it might make you feel a certain way. It might make you say, oh, you know, why do I have this t-shirt? Why am I not just selling $20, $30, $40 t-shirts or whatever? But then it does give you a competitive advantage, because there's a reason why the quality is there. And then the people who are buying it, they want that quality. You know, they have the money. And so I think it's a lot about patience, you know, and that's where I bring to the crypto thing, because it's like you have to buy into something and have belief. You know, you have to have belief that there's value there, because you're going to go up and down during a certain timeline. But there will come a time where people see value in it. And I think it's the same thing with any type of psychological pricing that you're putting in there. You have to believe in those prices, or else nobody else will.
You know, crypto, we'll have to do a whole nother podcast, honestly, on crypto and like creating the narratives and building the brand around it, because it's all been like a hype cycle until maybe this cycle where it's a utility cycle. And, you know, some of the things that are coming out, people have real conviction. I mean, people had real conviction of Bitcoin and wouldn't sell it from a couple dollars, couple cents, whatever, to $67,000. That's over $70,000 now. It's like, and it's, you know, I mean, you can argue the value and all that, but just the conviction that someone had in the narrative as the narrative builds and as it comes out of the mind into the words, into reality, right? Like the creation of it is just really, really amazing. Some of the things you said, you know, you were talking about social signaling. I don't know if you want to touch on that really briefly as we move into memes, because when I think about social signaling, and I think about, well, digital assets and in video games, you know, different skins and themes and things that you can do. So much of the social signaling that used to be the bags, the purses, the shoes, the hats, the brands, right? People wear the tags on their stuff. Because so much more of our world is digital now, those same social signaling components go transform online. And then what you're talking about is, people looked at it in a vacuum and wasn't sure about it, right? And then they started getting confirmation, social signaling from other areas that they respect and value. It helped them map to what is value to them, because not a lot of people that I don't think this is, like even on LinkedIn, I'll give you a data point. On LinkedIn, less than 5% of people globally are creators. 95% of people are consumers. And so like, I mean, that blew my mind, and that data point might have changed since I heard it at a conference. But if you think about, so many people don't know who they are and where their roots are potentially. And they're looking all around them to identify who they are and what the value is. And if you're a brand trying to do that, you're going to end up pretty bland on the bell curve, and you're going to try to be something to everyone. And you need to push yourself to an extreme, and, you know, thought leadership and trend setting and all those things. Like, you have to be bold to stand out today. I mean, tell me what your just kind of definition is or thought is around what is social signaling and why that's important.
It's so, I love this question. I love this concept, because I think it's about our animal nature, right? All animals are socially signaling to each other, right? It's like, you see it with peacocks and you see it with bulls, like the antlers, you know? So it's, I think it's so inside of us that we don't even know how inside of us it is to, like, the Rolex is the same thing as like the big antlers, you know, and the caloric energy that it takes, and that it's attracting the female in this dance that we're all playing. You know, this is the thing too. It's like, at the end of all this business is play, right? It's like, and so these are like the deep psychological motivations for people to buy clothes, to go to school, to even have a job, right? To get a paycheck. Right. So it's like, why are people doing these things in the first place? And the more we can understand it from a animalistic standpoint, which is very much like breeding and, you know, the feminine wanting safety and security. Right. And what is the masculine attracted to? These, understanding these things, which is what social signaling is all about. Right. It's like the masculine social signaling, like, I have security, you know, which in modern time is like wealth and power and status. And then the feminine, you know, wants that security, right? So it's like the feminine is super, super comfortable around security, right? So if you're ever around someone super wealthy and the feminine, like, that's a comfort level for the feminine, right? And for all of us, like, we all like to be around abundance. And so this is what the social signaling is doing. And you can think about it for your brand. Like, how do you tap into that? How do you help people get the things they want? And that could even be from running a company. It's like, your employees want to get married and have partners. And like, this is something that motivates them, right? And so I think instead of being bashful about it, it's really like going direct to those things, because sometimes we play all these games with, you know, making money and stuff. But it's like, what's at the end of the day, that's what I love about America and culture. At the end of the day, after you build all the roads, after you do all the business, you really just want to have a good time. You know, you want to be with your friends. You want to drink. You might want to smoke. You might want to eat some good food. And that's also big business. You know, you want to travel. All those things are big, big business, right? That's what America's about. You want to go to sports games. You want to sit on the floor. You know, you want to watch the Yankees or whatever. And so these things are all integrated in social signaling, but at the same time, that's all big business, right? So we're all playing a part of this huge ecosystem, which some of it is just like, you know, we're systematically building things like roads and houses and things that we have to kind of like structurally. But then on top of that is clothes, is, you know, going out to the clubs, alcohol, is going out to like fancy restaurants, because on a very basic level, we don't need to spend more than what, $15, $20 for a meal, right? And so everything above that is really culture and experience, you know, and that's such a like big part of where we're headed when it comes to marketing and experiential marketing. And that's playing in all those little fields.
Man, you know, it was funny. You're like, it goes back to like fundamentally play. And I've been reading some like, you know, 100-year-old, 200-year-old books, right? And like understanding like the psychology as I've started to dig into it. I have, you know, Thought Contagion and Darwisnik, Darwizing Culture. And then this Electric Meme book, which I really like. And I'm starting to kind of dig into that and understand it. And then it provides all these references that go back to like the fundamental level of what drives us. And in the, at the end of this, I would love to get some examples that really stand out from you, of maybe brands that are doing this well at the end of the podcast. But man, like, you just, to grow a brand, to create the virality, like certainly there's like the mechanics of understanding how the algorithm works, but it's what is the value that you're pushing, right? Like like a lot of these books are talking about memes and thought being a virus. Okay. And if you think about like what a virus is, it's just like a couple proteins. It's like not very much stuff. Right. Yeah. And when you're sharing a meme, like, I think that's thought, it's a thought virus. Right. And there's actually like identification with a thought that other people can identify with, that you can rally around to say we're instinctual creatures of, you know, community, right? And it's like, I believe this, and you're kind of putting it out there saying, who else is with me? Like to maybe on a very basic level, that's kind of how I think about it. I mean, what's your definition of memes and maybe the role that you think it has in culture today?
Yeah, memes are ideas that are expressed through some type of easy imagery or video or even text, right? So it's really an idea that can be expressed in some type of simple form that then does catch on, right? So a meme, in order to be a meme, it has to have some type of stickiness, right? So people catch it, they share it, they like it. My son said, I've been 18-year-old son, he said something to me probably like 3 years ago, and he said, you know, he's like, I love memes so much. He said, a good meme can make your whole day. But a good meme can literally make your whole day better. And it's just like, I think, you know, like if you think about it from that context, like how many things can make your whole day better, right? It's like, you know, we think about things like a good cup of coffee, you know, and like maybe a good meal, like having sex, but it's like, there's not a lot that like can make your whole day better. But it's like, because these ideas make us feel certain ways, you know, it's like, I think it's also about our deep need to feel connected to a community. And I think that's why it makes us feel so good. Cause it's like, we can feel so alone, right? All of us can feel so alone and so separated from the world, even though we're actually all so connected. you know, whether we're different races, whether we're different gender backgrounds, whether we come from different religions, all that can be true. But on a very core level, we all have the same emotions. You know, we're really all going through very similar experiences of having parents. You know what I mean? Like, what we have hopes and dreams and ambitions and fears. And that's what memes tap into. You know, they tap into things that transcend religion, transcend race, transcend these boxes. And at the same time, it might even be about those things, right? So the meme might be about race. The meme might be about gender. But we can all identify with that thing if it's true, you know, and that's the same thing. I think memes, they sometimes are referenced in like the reference of like a joke or comedy, but that's because that's what comedy is comedy is like really deeply understanding how the world works and like kind of presenting that, you know, like somebody like Seinfeld, he has these like one-liners and things like, oh, you're on the airport and what's, you know, and we all have gone through that, but it's like, it takes someone to kind of look at it from that angle and just present it to us like Dave Chappelle does. And then it's like, oh my God, that's so funny, because we all have that really annoying experience or that funny experience or that fearful or shameful experience. And I think we really want to just capture that as humans. Like, you know, the more we can...
It's art. I mean, it's art to have you feel a certain way or experience a certain thing. I mean, one of the things that you said that, again, every time I talk to you, it makes me like think, right? Mm-hmm. And so you're talking about a meme, and I'm talking about like the virality of the meme and like all this kind of stuff. And then you're talking about, how does that meme make you feel? And then what trajectory does that send you on? And what you have to take what kind of action, right? And so you're developing a theme that is bumping up against all the other experiences we're having on a daily basis. I mean, like from an ad standpoint, what is it? 7,000 something like ads are coming at you a day. You know, you're talking about, okay, this one interaction, this one experience that you can laser connect with so much is going to provide so much energy into that like thought or that experience that it's going to change the way and propel you to a different place in the way you think and how you interact with stuff. And then it actually, again, going back to the virus standpoint, it actually changes how you're looking at everything else. Okay. Yep. So it's like, as it touches other stuff, it's changing your perspective. And then, you know, comedy, I didn't even think we were going to talk about comedy in this podcast, but like comedy is such an art form to show the playfulness of the mundane, right? Of what's going on. And, you know, I don't know. I just, this is why I love talking to you, Rick.
It's like, I love it too.
We take our different perspectives and when we connect them, like different thoughts come out of it, right? It's like flashing two things together. And then there's like a unique, I guess it's a, we're just doing the thought, exercises of the large Hadron collider or whatever it's called.
We think about a lot of the same topics too. You know, you're in digital marketing, you know, you're in this digital space thinking about the digital world. You know, you're thinking about how does content get created and how does it get shared? And these things, I think that if you do care about them, you're thinking about them in a very deep level, because you know, that's what we're getting paid for. But I think there's something about us that we also really like it. You know, like I like memes. I like Instagram. I like being online. I like having a digital world. And my kids like it. You know, I have an 8-year-old daughter. She loves being on Roblox, you know, and she has a digital identity there. And talk about social signaling. It's like, she'll tell me, she's like, you know, if somebody doesn't have Robux or they're not spending Robux, they're like considered like a noob, you know? So it's like, it's almost like how we look at people who aren't dressed a certain way here in the real world. it's like there's social signaling. Like if you show up to a business event and you're like all super dirty, it's going to be a little bit harder to do business, you know, than if you show up looking more presentable. And that's just, we're always social signaling to each other. And all of that is really moving to the digital space, you know, like meme coins are blowing up. And I remember having this debate with a really large artist. I won't even say his name just because I didn't like his side of the debate, but I was basically saying, look, meme coins, and this one was Doge was really blowing up and Elon was pushing it. And I was saying, look, meme coins are great for crypto because it makes people interested. It makes somebody who wasn't interested in crypto all of a sudden say, you know what? I do like crypto. And one of the most important marketing factors of all crypto is literally the price, you know, which is a meme. All crypto is a meme, right? Which is the same thing with companies. Like if you look at the Fortune 500, you'll look at the earnings compared to what the stock price is, sometimes are super mismatched. Yeah. And that's because it's a meme, meaning it's an idea. Like Tesla is an idea and they have products that's underneath it, but then the market is based on the idea. It's not always just based on the product. And so the same thing is true for like crypto or any type of content you're creating. It's like you have these ideas that people are really willing to catch on to, where maybe they don't want to care about Ethereum and, you know, smart contracts. Maybe that's just too complicated, but oh, Doge and a dog, like that's fun. And, you know, now I own that. And guess what? I can talk about Doge because it's not complicated and it's fun. And if you think about it, the ability for me to own it and talk about it makes it more valuable than something that's actually technically valuable, but I don't really want to talk about it or own it. Right. So it's like these things, that's why they do have value, because, you know, it's a network effect. If somebody's talking about it, if somebody derives value to it, then it does have value. And that goes back full circle to the $250 t-shirt. It's like, yeah, you might not find value to this t-shirt, but as long as somebody walks into my store and spends the money, that shirt is worth $250. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've heard that many times. It's whatever somebody's willing to buy it for, right, is what it's worth. I think that going back to what you said, I you know, crypto in itself, you know, if you really understand the psychology component and you know that, like, okay, Bitcoin halving and the ETF was coming out and all that, you know, it's like, okay, buy Bitcoin. That's the basic premise. But if you understand it on the level that you understand it, you're going, okay, when crypto comes back in vogue, Dogecoin's going to go up first. Like the meme coins are going to go first because that's what brings more people into it. The exactly. Utility component of it is not that interesting for most people, right? And a lot of like you know, cryptocurrency, we're talking about NFTs, right? Like we haven't really said the word NFT, but there's a lot of art and there's the ability to interact with people and even for artists to connect with the audience. I think that that's the one thing that I want people to take away from this is how important today, like Tesla, it's about building this ecosystem, this audience. I mean, he knows how to work social media. He knows how to build businesses and he knows how to create an ecosystem where they all work together. I mean, he just said, oh, the car is going to be connected to the satellites, right? You know, and then like all, you know, and then Twitter, you know, it's just got their money license, right? And so you're going to want to buy products and transact with like everything X, right? Mm-hmm, and so, you know, he understands how important community is. And that's what people are doing with the memes, is like that identity. But to understand it at a deep level is so critically important. I can tell you, this is why I have, you know, I bought 5 books here that I'm going to read. And this is just starting the learning, because I have seen how people have just on social media, which, you know, I've seen this. I know people that are doing it, but for anyone listening, I am not the expert in social media marketing. We do it. I know how it interacts with the signals, but the community component, the engagement at people, you know, in the groups, building the avid fans. Seth Godin talks about this. Mm-hmm. The Content Institute talks about this, building a community and building an audience of the raving fans of that audience to be able to market those products into, or really to create that social signaling of whatever it is where the power lies. I mean, there's this concept of we're in this attention economy, and the community is how people are organizing because of technology. And you know, we don't have time to go into it today, but I'm talking about the automation. So again, this is a little bit out in left field for this conversation, but the intimacy economy, it comes back to the connection, but how AI and building personalized campaigns and drips where you're connecting with people on a one-to-many level is so powerful. So you start with the thought leadership, and then, you know, but what are you trying to do? You want people to identify with your brand as being part of your community. Yes. That's I think where the magic is today. I mean, can you talk maybe a little bit about, you know, you grow, so what your business is, you grow, social media accounts for people, you help them identify, brand direction. Maybe talk about, some of the technical aspects of what you're doing, and then, you know, what you do really well, because I think as, the more people are growing up that have consumers, like if you're talking B2C, more consumers are absolutely growing up with the internet where they've been born into. Okay. I mean, I'm one of the generations where I remember AOL dial-up modem and what the world was before that, where, like, I mean, now to think, hey, we got to meet on this corner at 3:30. And if you're not there, we're going to go into the movie without you. And then you're never going to be able to find your friends again. Like, that's how it is when the cell phones stop working. Like, that is not the world we live in. We also live in the world where interruption marketing is a thing of the past. Like, you have to place stuff. Like, the ad is actually like the whole story in the brand, and it's tied into the fabric of what you're doing of product placement.
Yes.
It's not, hey, I'm watching this, and then here comes an ad that's trying to sell you something else and distract you. People do not like that anymore, right?
No, so people hate that.
Changing. So talk about the value of what you're doing, kind of how you're doing it, how it might benefit brands, and then how to get in touch with you.
Yeah, so we launch and grow social accounts, and we're focused on short form video, right? So Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and we identify these channels and help brands understand what is their unique selling point in the marketplace. Sometimes brands need complete rollout and creation of these social channels, right? So we help them with that. We use many of the AI tools to make sure that we're identifying the best way to present their brand, you know, based on what their core demographic is. And then we have a whole campaign that's created, whether it's a 6-month campaign or a yearly campaign. And it's basically based on growing and launching their accounts to the degree where now they have a funnel of, in our instance, thousands of people, right? So to give you an example of one of the brands we're working with, we have 1.2 million impressions that we're gathering per month. And we're growing this account at around 10,000 followers per month on Instagram, and then YouTube's around 2,000 per month. And so this is all organic. We're not spending any money on this. And a lot of it is understanding how are we creating content in a way that's actually connecting with the consumer. I think a lot of brands make the mistake of trying to sell their products or sell their services to the market. And that's inherently selfish, right? And so what we do is we help our customers, our clients, understand that, look, you have to really understand your customers in a way where you're adding value to them. And then by the time they're in your funnel, now they're going to have a relationship with you. Now they're going to be interested in caring about the things that you're selling because you've been adding so much value to their life. And you can put things into the campaigns that's now, like you said, it's unique to those customers. You can have unique AIs DMing them in a way that's onboarding them into your funnel through emails. It could be phone numbers. And so this is something that is kind of taking, you know, eyeballs, but it's bringing it really directly back into customers and into actual data points that then you can use and you can retarget. So the whole goal is to understand that, like you said, this is a funnel, right? It's like people don't want to be interrupted and say, hey, buy my product, but they are willing to follow you if you're engaging them in a way that they actually like and they can appreciate. And I think it doesn't matter what your business is. It doesn't matter if you're an accountant, doesn't matter if you're a plumber, you can create content that your customers actually love, right? And they can love your plumbing account. And when they think of plumbing, they can actually think about you, right? And I think most people that we work with, they don't want to handle their social media accounts. You know, they don't want to launch the account. They don't want to grow it. So we have teams that are helping with each part of the way, making sure that, you know, their business is running the way it should be running. And in the back end, we're growing their accounts each and every day.
I love that. Enrico Moses, how is the best way to get in touch with you? How can people find out more about what you do and get in contact with you? Because I am not, now this podcast is the Unknown Secrets of Internet Marketing, but my primary expertise is in algorithms and SEO and, you know, PR, thought leadership, that sort of thing. But I am not the expert. I need to grow my level of knowledge. And thank you for helping me do that, because social media marketing is so powerful, and it's just another tool in the tool belt of what you need to grow a brand. So how do people get in touch with you if they're looking for what you're offering?
Yeah, you can visit our website. It's tastydirectives.com. So tasty, like tasty food, and then directives.com. So you can check that out. I'm on social medias at Enrico Moses. But yeah, if you want to have your social accounts either launch or you want to grow what you currently have, you know, come to our website, reach out to us directly, and we would love to work with you. You know, we work with different types of brands. You know, we work with fashion brands, we work with restaurant companies, we've worked with startups in the past. So we've worked with a variety of different types of brands. And in the end, we're really here to understand your company, to help you understand your customers so that you can just connect with more people and in the end, just make more sales. You know, we always say we're here to help people make more money, because people are in business to make money, but we do that through, you know, helping you actually care about your consumer.
Awesome. I love that. I love also adding a sense into the name. So it draws that emotion. It's just so powerful. So if you like what you're hearing, please reach out to Enrico Moses. I'll put the link to your website as well as your social in the show notes, so you can check that out. And everyone, if you want to grow your brand with the most powerful tool in all the universe, the internet, reach out to us for more revenue in your business. You can check out ewrdigital.com. You can check out Enrico Moses and Tasty. What's the Tasty?
Tastydirectives.com.
Tastydirectives.com. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next time. Bye bye for now.